He's the guy who covers Seattle sports for ESPN 710 in the Emerald City, online at 710sports.com, at Twitter, try at the B Gustafson. Brandon Gustafson joins us. Always appreciate the time. How's life treating you these days?
Great. It's always easier to get to work after Seahawks win, and after two rough losses like they had, it was a little harder. So getting that win with Arizona definitely makes my life a lot easier.
Well, good. You deserve it. We all deserve it. You know, I thought the post-game piece that you posted Friday was really important. No one had to tell the defenders they were getting worked. The numbers were awful. They were in the midst of that losing run, like you said. So apparently the defensive coordinator, Ken Norton, kind of gathered everybody, and they just said, you know what, we just need to hold ourselves accountable.
Yeah, and what was interesting about that was, When I first posted the quote that Pete Carroll told our station in his morning show that he does every day after their games, people kind of misunderstood what exactly that meeting was about, because people were saying, oh, so it takes, you know, 10 or 11 weeks or whatever it is so that for these defenders to finally get their assignments. And it's like, no, it's not that. That was Ken Norton, who's received a lot of flack up here for the way that defense has been playing. Holding his guys accountable, putting them on the spot, saying, hey, we're in our base defense. What are you doing? Who are you communicating with? What are your tells? What are your signs? And then they just went across the room, boom, boom, boom. Every single person in there was put on the spot, had to tell everybody what they knew, what they were supposed to do. And Pete Carroll said, you know, it's kind of a turning point. It's a little bit of a revelation of like, hey, we know what we need to do. Now it's a matter of just going out and executing it. And they put together their best four quarters of football from a defensive standpoint against the Cardinals, and that's a really good offense. And Kyler Murray, I mean, he's going to be top five MVP candidate for sure.
While effort's important, and I would never discount heart and the commitment, Jamal Adams was back for a second game. The new pickup from the Bengals, Carlos Dunlap, second game in the system. The return of Benson Mayoa. I mean, sounds simple. How key was it just to have guys healing up and coming together?
Yeah, it was huge, and for those three specifically, the key thing that binds them all together is the pass rush, and that's something that you and I have talked about a few times here, both before the season and during the season, and it goes back to basically week one of last year. How are these guys going to get after quarterbacks and impact them? And that was arguably the biggest reason why the Seahawks lost in Arizona in week seven. They could not impact Kyler Murray at all. He had 48 passing attempts. They had no quarterback hits. They had no sacks. They had one quarterback pressure. That's just never going to get it done in today's NFL. Absolutely not. Carlos Dunlap goes out there, two sacks, game winner. Mayoa got in on a few rushes. He was also doing a little bit of like QB spy stuff towards the end when they were only rushing three. Adams had a few good rushes, QB hits in there. LJ Collier, the guy that everybody thought was a first-round bust, gets a sack and also forces a safety in the end zone. I mean, those guys were able to get after it, and it's very clear just how important that was to getting this defense pretty sound, especially when you're missing your two top cornerbacks.
Let's get to the offensive line. We continue with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 Seattle. It's also been a bit of an adventure. I read pregame they were going to have Kyle Fuller at center. Ethan Posick's out with a concussion. Turns out the rookie from LSU, Damian Lewis, their right guard, got the call. So if you evaluated his performance in its entirety from a rocky start to how he finished, what would be your read?
Yeah, rocky start is putting it lightly. That dude got absolutely worked on that first play, and Russell got hit pretty hard on the sack. And that was kind of scary because, of course, you're like, oh, great, this guy who's never taken a snap at center in the NFL or in college or, you know, maybe not even in high school. I'm not totally sure. But for the most part, he held his own. What definitely worked in his favor is Arizona doesn't have the best defensive line to begin with, and they were already down a few key guys, especially at the interior. But he's a great run blocker, and we know that. And they were able to open some big holes for Carlos Hyde and Bo Scarborough, and Russell Wilson was able to have enough time to get going. But, it's just admirable to be able to slide over from right guard to center, regardless of how long you've been in the NFL when that's not your spot. And for him to be a rookie and do that, he played pretty well overall. He had a few holding calls. Like I said, he had the sack on the first play that he allowed, but hey, he's going to be able to go back to right guard next week with Ethan Posick back at center, so I'm sure that that's kind of a sigh of relief. But one of the big issues that we saw with Kyle Fuller was there were a few bad snaps. That really wasn't the case with Damian Lewis, which was a pretty big surprise.
You know, at the highest level of sport, you have that next man up mentality, and it's really admirable, but not all guys are equal. You just mentioned his name. The running game had been just wrecked, or, you know, Rashad Penny, Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, and I heard in the post game Russell Wilson was just delighted. Brandon, how much of a jolt to get Hyde back in there?
Oh, that was huge. They needed that in the worst way, because when you look at those losses to the Los Angeles Rams and the Buffalo Bills, two things that really stand out are just the way that those defenses approach that offense. They knew that they were beat up in the run game. They knew that the top guy at the time was an unproven rookie in DJ Dallas. So they weren't scared of that. I mean, Alex Collins stepped up against the Rams, but you know, he was the guy they just basically signed off of the street. Getting someone who's capable like Carlos Hyde in that backfield just opened everything up. He ran for like 5 yards a carry or something like that, and I tweeted about it during the game. My favorite play of that game was him getting out on the outside to the right. He's getting near the goal line, and he's got Patrick Peterson in his face, and he has a chance to step out of bounds, lowers the shoulder, just absolutely drives that guy into the ground, and then the next play punches it in for the 1 yard touchdown. But the issue when the Seahawks lost 3 of 4, they were turning the ball over way too much. Russell Wilson was under a lot of pressure. He was getting sacked and hit way more than he should be because defenses were just able to key in on the passing game. So getting someone like Hyde, who ran for 1,000 yards with the Texans last year, it's not like he's some slouch as a backup. It's just that when he's healthy, Chris Carson's that good. So that just opened everything up, and it let Russell be efficient. I mean, didn't throw for over 200 yards, but I mean, he had a great game overall.
When we talk, I always like to single out a guy. Great defenses have stars. Some don't get the proper love outside their city. In all likelihood, we know Bobby Wagner. His story ends in Canton. You know, on the old Giants, you had Lawrence Taylor, but the second fiddle was kind of Carl Banks. Here it's been K.J. Wright. Had that remarkable interception against Minnesota. Rarely comes off the field. I mean, you've seen him day in, day out for years. I mean, how special of a Seahawk has he been?
KJ Wright's the consummate pro, in my opinion, and he's somebody who, you know, he may not wear that C badge to be captain, but he's an unquestioned leader on that team, and him being out there is just so important to that defense and that team as a whole. And something that not a lot of people have really talked about this season is that for a long time, he's been the Seahawks' weak side linebacker. That's been his spot. That's been his go-to basically since he and Bobby started playing together in 2012, and KJ came to the team in 2011. But this year they go out and they drafted Jordan Brooks in the first round, and the plan was to kind of ease Brooks in there, get him in every once in a while, but have KJ stay at that weak side spot, Bobby stay in the middle, and then Bruce Irvin play outside linebacker at the strong side until he went and started rushing the quarterback. But KJ, after Bruce Irvin went down, he's moved to the strong side linebacker spot, playing closer to the line of scrimmage than he usually does. He's usually more off ball, and he's played great. And we saw that firsthand. Kyler Murray had that little read option keeper to the left on third down, and it looked like he was going to be able to get there. And KJ stuck his go-go gadget arms out to each side and said, "Come here, little guy, I'm going to get you down." He was able to get the stop. And that's what he does. You know, he continually makes plays. He's not the big splash play guy like Bobby Wagner is. He's not racking up 15 tackles a game like Bobby does, but he's always there. He always seems to be playing the spot well, and moving to strong side has actually worked out really well for him.
I got to go a quick baseball note, because when you and I spoke a couple times over the season about the Mariners, and with a few weeks left, we were both calling the Rookie of the Year for Kyle Lewis. And, you know, the best Seattle teams from Griffey to Cameron just rock solid in center field. He was their first-round pick 4 years ago, gets all 30-place votes. He even got some MVP votes. Brandon, how sweet was it watching this guy day in, day out?
Yeah, that was really cool. And when he was in the alternate site, when they had their spring training round 2 at T-Mobile Park, all eyes were on Jarrod Kelenic initially, just because, you know, top prospect there, and he was hitting the daylights out of the ball too. But then Kyle Lewis is going opposite field with ease, and he's putting the ball out of the yard like it's nobody's business, and the ball just sounds different off his bat when you're watching these videos, and you're just like, oh my gosh, what do we have here? Can he carry that over? And sure enough, first game of the year, hi, Justin Verlander, you know, multiple Cy Young winner, I'm going to take you 440 feet deep to left center field. And that just kind of kicked everything off. And it's always interesting to see somebody who goes out there in any sport and just kind of stakes a claim to any sort of end of year title, like an MVP or a rookie of the year or so on, and holds it the entire year. And that's basically what happened. Luis Robert with the White Sox, who finished in second place, he was the front runner. He's like the top three prospect in baseball. Everybody kind of thought that was going to be his award, but Luis was just he was just consistent. And I think his defense was a lot better than people initially thought. It was better than I thought. I always thought he was somebody that's going to have to move to left or right field after those knee injuries that he did, but he just played great ball. And when you have other exciting young outfielders like Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and Taylor Trammell in your farm system, I mean, having a guy like Kyle Lewis who's already there and essentially proven in a way, it's an exciting time to be following this team.
Yeah, looks like the foundation is set for positivity moving forward.
Yeah, that's different.
A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 Seattle. I'm kind of a numbers junkie, so I got to get to what you wrote about Russ Wilson yesterday. He fills in the column that means the most, W's. So kind of roll out some of what you covered about what he accomplished with a winning season last year and this year passing, you know, guys like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, the dude wins. And last year we wrote a story on the site about after they beat, I think it was when they beat the Philadelphia Eagles, ironically enough, who that's their next opponent. That was their ninth win of the year, and Russell Wilson was the first quarterback in NFL history to start his career with 8 straight winning seasons as a starting quarterback. It's, wow. You know, that jumps off the table immediately. And then you go to this year, this last win against Arizona, he has the most wins of any quarterback through their first 9 seasons, and we're barely halfway through the year. He passed Peyton Manning. Now he has 93 wins in his first 9 years in the regular season. It's just remarkable. And if you go and you look at these box scores since 2012 when the guy took over, this team is in every single game, and he is arguably the biggest reason why. They don't lose by more than one score very often. That's why it's always so surprising. That's why a game like that Buffalo game where they lost, what was it, 44-34, was surprising. But even then, he had the 4 turnovers, but he's the whole reason that they were even scoring in the 30s to begin with. He was doing it basically by himself. We were looking for stats about the last time that Wilson lost 3 games in a row because there was a chance that was going to happen against the Cardinals. You have to go back to his freshman year in college when he was at North Carolina State.
Wow.
I mean, all the dude does is win. He won at North Carolina State, which is not a great football program by any means in the ACC. You know, they're okay. Then he goes to Wisconsin after they told him, hey, we need somebody who's going to be here full time if you want to do some baseball on the side. Goes to Wisconsin. Turns himself into a 3rd-round pick, had, at the time, the best pass efficiency of anybody who'd ever played quarterback in college football history. The dude puts W's in the column, and at the end of the day, that's what matters when you're a starting quarterback.
Hey, I was at that Rose Bowl against Oregon. And they looked dead in
the
water.
Didn't get the W that
time. They looked dead in the water, and I should have known then. It's like, this guy's never out of it. All right. One final thing. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. It's the NFL, not college. Those heart-stopping wins early. This big one now lands him at 7-3. So now they'll end up with 11 days, sorry, in between games. So, Brandon, if you incorporate how they've healed up, where they stand, and like you wrote about the upcoming schedule, man, you got to feel really good about where this team is this last week in November.
Yeah, you've got 4 games coming up against 3 of the NFC East teams, which is the worst division I've ever seen in the NFL. It's terrible. You got the New York Jets, who are trying to go 0-16 and get Trevor Lawrence as their quarterback. And so just between those 4 games, I mean, you're coming out with at least 3, and you would guess, but like you said, you know, any given Sunday, you're trying to go 4-0. But looking forward, just with those 4 games, you get a rematch with the Rams, and you finish the season with the 49ers. They're at 7 wins right now. You got to think they're getting 4 or 5 wins over those next 6 games. You got to think they're getting at least 11 or 12 wins overall. And going to the health aspect of it, yeah, the kind of extra bye week and away from going from Thursday to Monday. That's huge. They're expecting to get Chris Carson back in the backfield. Ethan Posick, starting center, has been out for two games. They're expecting him back. Shaquille Griffin, their number one corner, he was a Pro Bowler last year. The goal is to get him back. Brandon Schell, their starting right tackle, he got a little nicked up, so maybe this gives him a little bit of extra time to get going. The only guy that's really not going to be able to get back out there is Greg Olsen. He tore something in his foot. It's not the same foot that he had this injury with, the torn plantar fascia, but they think it's 4 to 6 weeks. He said this isn't the end, but we'll see. Luckily, they have some decent tight end depth, but overall, getting a majority of those guys back before a pretty nice four-game stretch before you finish up with two divisional opponents, you got to be feeling pretty good heading into January.
Folks, he's Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle, online 710sports.com, on Twitter at TheBGustafson. Always terrific information, a lot of fun, always enjoy our chats, and greatly appreciate your time and insight. Healthy and a happy holiday to you and yours. Be well, and definitely look forward to chatting soon.
Yeah, same to you, Steve. Take care. Thanks, as always, for having me.
All right, have a good one.